it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now...
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, a show about local art. I am the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with the woman who never puts the less in, Leslie. Leslie, I'm Scott Jones.
Good morning, Clinton. I have a question for you.
What is your question for me, Leslie?
If you wanted to buy a Sam Cooke album, where would you go?
If I wanted to buy... Now, when you say Sam Cooke album, are we talking CD or are we talking vinyl?
You just completely missed that reference, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, you completely... Okay, Under the Cherry Moon?
Yeah.
Recosto?
Yeah, it's not my favorite one.
It's not your favorite one?
It's so not my favorite one.
But sometimes Prince, it snows in April. That's
Prince,
from that
I know,
move.
I know, but Prince, more than the 80s. Live it. Live it, learn it, love it. Prince, more than the 80s.
I love more than the 80s. I just... you, whatever.
All right. We should give our parental advisory, as we always start the show with one. At some point in the show, we will try not to, of course. Oh, goodness gracious. We will try not to because we care. We care for you and your little ones. At some point in the show, though, we might say the word splendor. Splendor. So, you know, if you have precious, precious young ones who might be too young or maybe too innocent to take in all of its glory the word splendor, you might want to send them out the room. Send them outside. Have them change your oil. It's about time they earn some their
what?
Way.
Clinton.
It's about time they did some work.
You know what, CD? It's very, very obvious during these parental advisories that you do not have children.
Okay. Is it obvious that I do not have children, or is it obvious that I should not have children?
Well, you said it, so I'm just going to go with it, okay?
Well, we should have our two guests, and we've got two guests sitting up here. Before we get to our guests, however, uh-oh. I'm going to give you this. My son can look me level in the eyes now and does hard when I tell him he cannot watch Chainsaw Murders at the midnight movie, that he must bend his mind to biology under this roof in the clear light of a tensor lamp. Outside, his friends throb with horsepower under the moon. He stands close, milk sour on his breath, gauging the heat of my conviction, eye whites pink from his new contacts. He can see me better than before, and I can see myself in those insolent eyes, mostly head in the pupil's curve, closed in by the contours of his unwrinkled flesh. At the window, he waves a thin arm, and his buddies squall away in a glare of taillights. I reach out my arm to his shoulder, but he shrugs free and shows me my father's narrow eyes, the trembling hand at my throat, the hard wall at the back of my skull, the raised fist framed in the bedroom window I had climbed through at 3 a.m. If you hit me, I'll leave forever, I said. But everything was fine in a few days, fine. I would have come back, I said, false teeth and all. Now, twice a year after the long drive in the yellow light of the front porch, I breathe in my father's whiskey, ask for a shot, and see myself distorted in his thick glasses, the two of us grinning as he holds me with both hands at arm's length. That was Leaving Forever by Ron Smith, Virginia's poet laureate. Did you know Virginia had a poet laureate? I didn't know Virginia had a poet laureate. Guess who did know Virginia had a poet laureate? Our two guests today, Sibley Johns, director of the Writer House, and Kara West. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
It is my pleasure. It is my pleasure. So the reason why you guys know that Virginia has a poet laureate and that Ron Smith is that poet laureate is that, Kara, you are the winner of the Writer House's 2016 poetry contest. Are you not?
Yes, I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So did you, have you been familiar with Ron Smith's work at all beforehand?
His name sounded slightly familiar. And then, of course, I Googled him.
Of course.
As we do everything these days. And he's in Richmond, and he's a writer in residence at St. Christopher's School. And I read some of his work after hearing about winning the contest. And so... actually, that was a great chance to get to know our poet laureate better. It was a nice side benefit to winning the contest.
Cool. So you didn't look him up while he was judging the work?
No. Actually, after I turned the poem in, I completely forgot about it.
Awesome. Awesome. So how long have you been writing as a poet?
I pretty much discovered poetry when I went to college. And it's kind of funny. I went to George Mason. I putzed around, took all different kinds of classes, took the classes I liked, and got called in for a first-time advising appointment when I was a junior. And my advisor said, finally, you're here. If you want to graduate on time, you have to be an English major. So, and I took probably 6 or 7 poetry workshops while in my time at Mason. Just fell in love with it.
So it was just a poetry rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Cool. So, not to ask the big, well, yes to ask the big question, not to burden you with the big question, but I was going to say, what is poetry to you? I'll back off from that because that seems like a juvenile question. I'll confess something. I am a complete novice in terms of poetry. People assume that I do poetry. I can't wrap my mind around it. It seems like this slippery fish that I can't quite grab. And I think partly it's because it can do so many different things, and mm-hmm. it can be so mm-hmm. many different things. I've even spoken to friends of mine who are poets, and I've said, explain this weird thing to me that mm-hmm. is poetry, and I've never been able to get a clear example. So for your work, what is important for you? Is it poetry as a written document? Is it poetry as something that is heard? Is it something that you need to read and hear?
Primarily, to me, poetry does exist on the page. It's so much about the language, and for me, on language on the page. I love spoken word. I'm not very good at it at all. I love to listen to it. I think that's like brings another whole aspect to poetry. But for me, it really started with and the core for me is the actual words on the page, almost like a puzzle. It's very important to me that line breaks and indentions, every periods, anything that you put on the page, whether it's a space, a punctuation mark, that's part of the poem. I actually did a visual poetry zine for a while. This is way back in the days where you went to Kinko's at, you know, like midnight to Xerox it.
What? What? You didn't just print it off on your laser printer?
Not at all.
like anyone prints anything these days.
Right, exactly. So yeah, and that opened up poetry even more. It was like, not that the poem makes a definite picture on the page, but the construction of the language is the key to me. But when you hear poetry out loud, it's just almost like a celebration of the words to me. But the gift itself are the words on the page.
Do you think that poetry should be like a puzzle that's figured out by the listener/reader? Is it something that should be apparent and clear? What are your thoughts on that?
Sometimes I think about, I think about a lot of things in life this way, that there are tribes, and I had an awesome poetry teacher actually in Richmond post college, where I took a workshop, Leslie Scheel, and she introduced me to the idea of thinking about poetry in terms of tribes. You find your tribe, you find your readers, your fellow writers, you find the poets you want to read, and that's your tribe.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and I don't think poetry necessarily has to be super dense or challenging, but some people like that kind. I mean, it's just you got to find your tribe.
So who's your tribe?
Oh, it's changed somewhat. I definitely gravitate towards female poets. I had a big female confessional, somewhat dark phase in college with...
Oh, I think we all have one of those phases in college.
Yeah. You know, Sylvia Plath, Anne Sexton, Sharon Olds is not... She's a much more functional person. She's still alive. And she writes some really great, straightforward family poems that changed my life at one point.
Wow.
Mary Oliver for the Nature Poetry.
Oh.
You gotta love her.
Okay. So how long did you study poetry? I mean, you started in college, but did that end the study, or have you continued to delve into it afterwards?
Oh, definitely have continued. So post college at George Mason, I went back to Richmond and fell into sort of a poetry group there, and did try some spoken word. Never my forte, but I took several workshops
But we try things. Right?
Yes, we try things.
We're artists. We experiment.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'd say a good 5 years after college, when I was single, no mortgage, trying different jobs, that was my outlet. I was very involved in that, and life certainly has marched on. I did take a class at Writer House. I think I was pregnant with my first child, but post children. Things do change.
Really?
Yes.
That's such a surprise to me.
It's just splendor.
Yeah, I think
splendor.
We've already talked about the fact
that... That was clearly a joke. That was not a surprise to me.
Yeah, okay.
That was everyone out there. You're the only person who didn't know that that was a joke.
Really?
Everyone out there
knew
that that was a joke.
Wow, you're very defensive this morning.
Because you always come at me. I know. That's why I'm just kidding.
It's okay. It's okay. Calm down, Clinton. Jeez. Wow. I just love poking at you. That's all. It's a little love tap. That's all.
It's like a love slap. That's
love slap. Baby, love slap.
Anyway. Folks lining up outside just to get smacked down. Anyway. So tell us about this poem, the poem that you wrote for the contest, the winner of the inaugural Writer House contest.
Right. In conjunction, I have to say, with the JMRL Public Library, because
yes,
the public library
friends
is...
Friends of the JMRL.
Yes. Public library is huge in my life with two kids who love to read already. So this poem, as will be seen by the title, is specifically about the time I was... my actual time I was born. And as maybe a lot of mothers and fathers, parents do, they retell the stories of their children's birth. And so I've heard this story from my mother a lot. It definitely has some poetic license in it too, of course. But I wrote this, either my first son had just been born, or I was pregnant and I was, you know, trying to wrap myself around, my mind around a human being coming out of my body. So I put this down on paper, that the story my mother has always told about my birth.
But I think that's something that's universal to everyone. I mean, I tell my daughter loves to hear the story of the night she was born.
Yes.
So does my son.
Yeah.
My mom has told that story to me about my birth. That's something that's so central to just about everyone.
Totally. Yes.
So what stuck out for you about your story that you needed to turn it into poetry and put it to paper?
There's one line in here that is alliterative and is attempts to convey the sound that my mother remembers. She remembered a specific sound when she was actually in the hallway of the hospital because there were no rooms available, but right after I had been born, and she was sort of dozing off. Really the sound. I've also written poems about specific smells, because some of those sensory things, they take on a huge life when associated with a significant event. So I think conveying that sound was the most important part to get this down.
Okay. Very cool.
We should do a drop. We should do a drop.
Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series. You're listening to 94.7 FM, Homegrown.
17 minutes past the hour. If you're just joining us, we are here with Kara West, winner of the Charlottesville Writer House inaugural poetry contest. We're also here with Sibley Johns, the director, and we're talking about poetry. We're talking about poems. Sibley.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Speaking about the Writer House, speaking about this poetry contest, tell us about the inaugural poetry contest of the Writer House.
Yeah, sure. As Kara just said, it was done in partnership with the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. And
so what does that mean? How did the partnership work out?
Well, I reached out to the staff there, and we had a meeting a while back and talked about ways we could partner, and they were talking about the Big Read, which just happened the other night where Kara read her poem.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff there, I want to thank Haley Tompkins, who I work with closely, and she was great, and they were very enthusiastic, and they do a lot of poetry stuff at the library, and they were talking about poetry, and I said, hey, why don't we have a contest? And Haley was like, that sounds really cool. Let's do a contest. And I said, hey, let's get the Poet Laureate of Virginia and, you know, to judge it. And Haley looked at me like, really? And I said, sure, I'll write him a letter. You know, what's the worst that can happen? And, you know, you might say no, but, you know.
Yeah, but he's the Poet Laureate. He might say no in a disturbingly effective and potent way.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, it was intimidating writing that letter, just making sure it was all, you know, proper. Writing the
Poet
Laureate.
Grammar has never been more important, huh?
Absolutely. So I wrote him a letter, and he very graciously agreed to be our judge, which was just a big coup for everybody involved. And
that's great. He didn't leave you awash in the splendor of his disdain.
No, he was really kind and gracious and said he'd be happy to help. And so, you know, we were just incredibly fortunate to have him be our judge. And so again, we work with the library staff. We put together the contest rules, and we put it out, and all the entries were accepted only by mail, actually snail mail, or hand-delivered. So everybody brought their entries into the library or to Writer House. We had over 90 entries, which is really great. I mean, I was very excited. It was one of those, you know, writers always procrastinate, and
no, we do not. I resent
so
that remark.
Actually, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before the contest ended, I contacted Haley and said, hey, you know, how many entries do you have there? And I think she said, you know, oh, maybe 25. And we had received a few at Writer House. And then there was just this onslaught of like 70 poems at the end, you know, and it was like, oh, hello, it's raining poems. So, you know, we were really excited.
Poetic rain.
It was purple poetic rain that was coming down. And so, you know, in the end there, it was just a lot of fun because we got so many and such great quality poems. So it was really fun.
That's awesome that you did it only by personal delivery and snail mail.
It's kind of rare, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I have run other contests, and sometimes the electronic nightmares of people trying to submit, like, through the way you have to kind of set these things up on websites is, you know, and then you've got all these people calling and saying, you know, I pushed the submit button, I filled out everything, but the poem didn't go through. And Writer House also runs a fiction writing contest, which we're actually going to be announcing very soon. I'll just give you a sneak preview that Ann Beattie is going to be our judge for that.
Holy smokes!
Which is another beautiful coup that we were able to make happen.
You'll just reach out to anyone, won't you?
You know, it was special thanks to my board president, Allison Wright, who is the managing editor of Virginia Quarterly Review for that. So at any rate, so we run that contest, in which we've done for 4 years now, I think. And, you know, we've just had these crazy snafus with the electronic submission things. And it's just kind of one of those things where the technical nightmares just kind of bum you out because everyone's gets frustrated. So I just thought, you know, the USPS still exists. People have stamps. And people have legs, and they can walk places and deliver them, you know, to us.
And hey, those postal workers need some job security. That's
exactly.
That's what this is about.
Well, they need to be part of the artistic process. So we thought, you know, that's a great way to get them to feel good about, you know, bringing these lovely works of art to us. So, and the other part, honestly, is that, you know, you have to print out all these things, and there can be weird snafus with that, too. So if the artist themselves is bringing it to you in the condition, you know, that they want it, then it's kind of gone through their eyes without that sort of intermediary process. So I kind of like that, and makes sense.
All right. Yeah, she's thinking it out. So speaking of the artist themselves or the artist herself, Kara, would you like to read your award-winning poem for us, please?
Sure. Thanks. So I talked a little bit about how this is specifically about my birth. So here we go. July 29, 1970, Anchorage. My mother says minutes after I was born, while the doctor was stitching between her legs, he and my father talked of salmon fishing, how in Alaska there's nothing better. How, if you find a sweet spot, you can stand and hook them all day. You can cook one while catching another and eat it when you need a break. And how plump and pink and tender. At 4 a.m, my mother was too tired to raise a fuss, much less her voice. She lay and dozed to the soft, slightly sticky sound of white nurse's shoes, which she mistook in her dreams for the sucking of her new babe already at its source. Plump and pink and tender. When I did come to her, I was not pink, but yellow, jaundiced and not plump, but stringy, long, with two mottled blinking black spots. She's a banana fish, my mother cried, bursting into tears. My father whispered promises of beautiful salmon fishing trips he would never take me on into my new ears.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kara West, Sibley Johns, thank you very much for coming on our show. Sibley.
Thanks for having us.
Where can people hear about the next contest that the Writer House is doing?
We'll be announcing the fiction writing contest in the next week or so. It is in partnership with Seaville Weekly, and they'll have an announcement. You can go to our Writer House website. Probably later next week. We're actually transitioning to a new website right now. It's a beautiful time. but you can go to www.writerhouse, all one word, writerhouse.org, to find out more about the contest. And we should, again, if this transition is as smooth as we hope it is, we'll have our new website up and it'll be on there very soon.
Awesome. Great. Thank you guys very much. Next year, only poems written with quills and ink.
Exactly.
That sounds perfect.
All right, let's talk about some of the stuff that you can catch around town. Currently running until April 30th, speaking of poems, how do you haiku at the Crozet branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library? Submit a haiku about books, readings, or libraries, and the library's creative writing group, Musings, we'll select one for display. The contest is open to young poets. We're talking grades from 6 to 12. Also currently running. You got
just a few days left to catch these exhibits at the Fralin Museum of Art at the University of Virginia. We're talking until May 1st to catch two extraordinary women, the lives and art of Maria Causeway and Mary Darby Robinson, and also Richard Sarah Prince. Both of those, once again, at the Fralin Art Museum at the University of Virginia. Also currently running from now until May 7th at Live Arts, it's Hunter Gatherers. Two couples have dinner and fall into a frank discussion of being on top and being on the bottom, of leaders and followers, and how humans are just animals after all. Get your info and tickets at livearts.org. Also, today, the Charlottesville Writer House has the Secrets to Writing Everyday workshop by instructor Joan Mazza. For more information, check out that URL that Sibley just gave you, www.writerhouse.org. Also, today is the second and last day of auditions for Once on This Island at Four County Players. Production dates for the end of July and beginning of August. Auditions are by appointment only, so if you want to sneak in, contact Four County. From April 28th to the 30th, it's the Spring Dance Concert at UVA. April 28th, New City Arts Spring Dinner, a three-course meal and raffle with performing artists between the courses, 6 p.m. at the Old Metropolitan Hall. From April 29th to May 1st, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center presents Keith Lee Dances. Tickets available now online at jeffersonschoolheritagecenter.org. $15 in advance, $20 at the door. Also April 29th to 30th, Wings, a play loosely based on The Birds by Aristophanes. Playing on the 29th at the Ix Art Park and then on the 30th at the Fry Springs Beach Club. April 30th also is the Charlottesville Writer House Seminar, Writing from Life, with instructor Rebecca Taylor. For more info, writerhouse.org. And April 30th, you're going to see Hairspray at Albemarle High School. May 6th to 15th, Ghost the Musical, based on the popular film. Yes, that popular film. Playing at Shannon Arts in Stanton. Tickets at shannonarts.org. And coming back here, May 6th to the 22nd, the Great American Trailer Park Musical at Four County Players. And May 14th to 15th, Creatures at City Clay. Make your own creatures, real or imaginary. Check out for more info at cityclayseville.com. And May 14th, auditions for Shannon Arts' summer production of West Side Story in Stanton, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. More info, of course, at their website. And here's just some of the musical stuff that you can check out this week. Today, the Blue Ridge Irish Music School Spring Showcase at the Haven at 2 o'clock. Also, the UVA Jazz Ensemble at 3:30 at Old Cabell Hall. And of course, tonight, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Tomorrow, Seville Jazz's monthly artist educator series at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. It's Monica Herzig on piano, Gina Sobel on flute, Dara Garadia on bass, and our man Robert Jospay on drums. The Joss. April 26th, the Virginia Film Festival shows... that's not a musical thing. That should have been earlier. Anyway, but the Virginia Film Festival shows Holy Hell, a documentary 20 years in the making about life in a California cult. It was all the buzz, apparently, recently at Sundance. They're showing it at the Violet Crown. April 27th, open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. April 28th, the Michael Ellswick Gathering at Fellini's. Also at on April 28th, after you see the Widespread Panic show, go on into Rapture for the Seville All-Star Widespread After Party. John Brunner, Robert Prescott, Charlie Murchie, and Ryan Callender. April 29th, Fridays After 5, our man Michael Clem and her checkered past at the Pavilion. And also April 29th, you don't want to miss that unless you're going to go see Scuffletown at the Glasshouse Winery. April 30th is the final concert of the season for the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra. They're doing Mussorgsky's Pictures at an exhibition, plus works by Tchaikovsky and Respighi at Old Cabell Hall. April 30th, the Duck Brothers at Rapture, Rene Ruth Duo at Wild Wolf Brewery, and Robert Jospray Express at Fellini's. And of course, every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Wednesday, it's Bob Bonetta at Cafe Couture, and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's, and Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Next day, if you're not worn out by that, every Thursday, it's the Woolen Riders Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. Or you could skip over to the mall for the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And that's just some of the wonderful artistic things we can do in our wonderful artistic town. If you are an artist and have an event that you'd like us to talk about, we would like to talk about your event. Contact us at our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can email us at homegrown947@gmail.com.
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
31 minutes past the hour. Mike's setting us up with the drop. So is that technically, wait for it, a mic drop?
Oh, okay. Did you not take your medication this morning? There's been...
Medication joke is old. You did it last week.
You did the medication joke last week. Baby, it's not a joke. I'm seriously asking. I'm a little worried.
Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. Homelessness with Khaki Democ from the Thomas Jefferson Coalition for the Homelessness. But before we get that, time to talk dance. Welcome to the show... from the University of Virginia. I think I've heard of it before. We have Kim Brooks Matta, Director of Dance. How are you, Kim?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you for coming on. You brought two people with you.
Yes, I did.
Would you like to introduce them?
Certainly. I have Mona Kasra, who's the digital media designer at the University of Virginia, and Deb Adi from Montclair State University. They're both working with me on a collaboration that will be premiered in our show next week.
And tell about that show, because coming up next week, it's the spring dance concert, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So there are 9 different pieces, so you get the opportunity to see a very eclectic accumulation of different dances that we've been working on over the last semester. We have student pieces, we have faculty work, and we have a lot of different elements in each of those pieces.
Awesome. So when you say student pieces and faculty work, is it student choreograph, faculty choreograph? Is it student dance, faculty dance? Is it like a whole mix?
It's a mix. Great question. We have students that are choreographing. We have students that are performing. We have faculty who are choreographing and working with students as they perform. It's pretty exciting.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how many different styles of dance are we looking at? Is it mostly modern dance, or what are we talking about?
Mostly modern contemporary, yeah. But our students have studied multiple forms, so you'll see a little bit of everything in there.
You know, it's rare to find a dancer who hasn't studied multiple forms, isn't it?
We're multitaskers. We like to do a lot of different things. We have our hands in many pots, I suppose. Our feet.
Indeed. And that just makes things exciting, because it's fun to be watching a dance concert and say, oh, well, hey, there was a little ballet thrown in there.
Yeah, certainly. Like,
there's a little jazz going in there.
A little jazz happening there, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think that dance today is moving away from formalistic distinctions? I asked that because I was just at the Charlottesville Ballet, mm-hmm. I guess a couple months ago, and watching their show, and some of their classical piece was a classical piece, but some of their more modern pieces had a lot of movements, a lot of shifts, a lot of transitions where I said, well, that looks like modern dance to me.
Certainly. Well, I think that dancers today need to be quite versatile. They've always needed to have versatility, but I think that the way that people are beginning to create work now requires that you have a lot of different abilities at your disposal. And so studying multiple forms enables you to be able to cross those barriers or boundaries that are becoming less and less clear, I think, as we move forward, which is exciting. I enjoy being able to see multiple forms in a piece and seeing dancers that are able to have really straight, erect lines, but also mess that line up a little bit and play with gravity and weight in a different way. So I think that's exciting. I actually set a piece on the Charlottesville Ballet last spring. So that
oh,
was
did
an
you?
Opportunity to begin to play with those dancers in a way that they don't typically move. So that was enjoyable for me. Yeah.
Nice. So talk about dance at UVA, because I imagine there might be some of our listeners who don't know that there's dance.
What? Dance at UVA? I know, right?
It's not as prominent as other arts.
It's true. And actually, in the fall, we'll be in our 10th year. So it's a newer program, and it's housed within the Department of Drama. So we have wonderful facilities at our disposal to be able to present our work. And so we're very fortunate.
So
someone can come to UVA and get a dance degree?
They can get a minor in dance. And if you decide to do an interdisciplinary degree, dance can be one of those three areas that you study. So that's how our students have done that in the past. We've had students go on to be dance therapists, to join regional companies in Chicago and in Oregon. And we've had students go on into creating films and dance films. So it's exciting. There's lots of opportunities for being
That's good information because... you know, I went to VCU and they had a completely separate dance program. You could major in it.
Right.
And, you know, when I was looking at UVA, that was one of my main complaints. I'm like, wait a minute. You have this awesome drama program. You have this amazing music program.
Absolutely.
Where's the dance?
Right. We're bringing the dance. The dance is there. We're building the dance. The dance is getting bigger. It's growing. But there's definitely an opportunity. It's not a professional school, but part of what makes it so exciting is that there are students that are studying multiple disciplines, and they're finding ways to integrate those into the work that they're exploring. So I find that really exciting.
Yeah. So how many collaborations do you guys do with the theater department? Because I know that when I was studying theater, I had a requirement to take several dance classes. There was a movement for actors class, which every actor hated, but it was a requirement, so we had to do it.
Right.
But then our acting teachers encouraged us to take different forms of dance. So a lot of us took modern dance. A couple people took African dance, just to be able to move in different ways and translate that into our art. So have you done that kind of collaboration with the theater department here?
We've certainly had many students that are involved in the drama major who have come in and taken our classes. Improvisation and modern one and ballet one tend to be the areas that they flock to. We've also had them taking contact improvisation. So, which is all really great about partnering, thinking about bodies in space, how you share weight, and how you move your body in, in close proximity to another person. So, yeah, it's great. We're looking for more and more opportunities for that to happen. We certainly have a lot of drama majors who are dance minors now, and there's actually a contact improvisation piece in the concert, and that was structured and choreographed by Brad Stoller.
Of course it was.
And he's a master contact improviser, as I'm sure your listeners know. And that piece, ironically, I was watching last night and realized that all of the students are involved in drama. We have a grad drama student. We have several dance minors who are drama majors. And then Brad, of course, who's involved. So it's really a lovely piece to see.
You know, some of my happiest moments on this earth have been doing contact improv with Brad Stoller.
Excellent. I can completely understand that.
Very fortunate to have had to have that in my memory.
Yeah.
Oh, lo, those many, many years ago.
Well, he's a beautiful soul.
He is. He is.
Brad.
He also has the tops of his feet are also beautiful as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
What? You only looked at the soles?
You are puntastic today. That's what you are.
So one of the striking things about UVA dance that I've seen for me is the spectacle. Because I'm used to, you know, dance lights up, four or five people go across a bare floor in very minimal costumes, do what they do, and then get out. But that's not what's going on at UVA. You guys have so much that you can play with. It's insane. So Deborah Mona, would you like to talk about some of the stuff that's going to be going on in this concert along with the dance?
Sure. So one of the pieces that I was fortunate enough to collaborate in is actually a piece that Kim choreographed. And we've been working on this piece since fall. It's because of a grant that we actually received through UVA's Arts Council to work on this piece that kind of deals with the idea of self-representation and self-projection and identity within our contemporary network time. And our goal was from the beginning to make this a very multimedia a very interdisciplinary piece. So we worked with the composer. Deb was, we've been very lucky to work with her on the costumes. And the content of the piece basically came out of especially like the way we use selfies now as a form of self-representation on internet. Kim worked, and I'd love for her to talk about how she actually choreographed using the dancers' selfies and how they think about selfies. I worked with a group of students, designers, who actually, we designed media around this choreographic piece and performative piece. So we have video, we have live manipulation of video going on throughout the piece. We have projections on the bodies. We have, it's a very incorporated piece in terms of so many different mediums coming together. So that's a very exciting, exciting piece to
that does
definitely
sound, that
check
sounds
out.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Thanks. We are excited about it.
Well, I'm going to just briefly pop in and then ask Deb to help elaborate, because Mona had mentioned, how we started working with our dancers with this piece. And I think sometimes people aren't really clear on how choreography happens. And it's obviously different depending on the choreographer and the project. But my students, I often ask them to collaborate with me in brainstorming ideas and how they come to a piece. And this piece in particular, because it was about identity and self, it was incredibly important that the students felt individually invested in what we were exploring, because it's dance is always an intimate act, but this piece in particular asks them to expose a little bit more of who they are as individuals than I think can be done in other pieces. So we started the process by having them. I put out paper on the floor and wrote down ideas of self, selfies, and identity. And they began to just brainstorm ideas, thoughts, wrote down words. And then from those words, we began to generate material in relation to what it was that they were exploring. And then I had other rehearsals where they had to write and continue to mine this information as we moved and created simultaneously. So there was a lot of writing, there was a lot of moving, and then there was a lot of figuring out who we were as a group and where we were with that material. And what was wonderful was when we brought Deb into this conversation as the costume designer, is that she asks fantastic questions, which I am grateful for as an artist. That's what I need. And also developed this board of images.
Can just set you right.
Oh my gosh, she came up with all of these images that she related to the ideas that we were discussing as a group, and in many ways helped me to figure out a lot of what I was struggling with at that point in time with the choreography and the direction that I was headed in. Just as it has happened with Christina Warren, who's not here with us today, who's the composer of the work. It's just amazing how working with other individuals can help illuminate and send you in directions you wouldn't have gone in on your own, which is just really amazing. So I'm gonna let Deb talk a little bit.
Hi. Well, I feel privileged to have been able to come down here and be part of this process. I started in February with the dancers, and they met with all of us and started to share what it meant to them to be part of this piece and what it meant, how selfies empowered them in some way, and sort of reported on some of the conversations and work they had been doing with Kim and Mona. And so I caught up, and then I responded with Pinterest boards of all the different images that occurred to me that related to that, the ideas of connectivity and self-imaging and the difference between a projection of the self and self-esteem. How do we empower ourselves through others? How do we empower ourselves through our own impulse? And what sort of images do we put out there in the world? How do we get dressed in the morning? What are our preferences? How do we think we look best? And each of the dancers also sent me ideas about what they felt in the world of clothing and silhouette and textile they felt very comfortable in and best represented who they were and how they would like to be sort of represented as an individual on stage in this dance. And then I interpreted that. So,
you know, it wasn't until you were speaking that it suddenly occurred to me that in issues of self-expression and in issues of self-image, a costumer is really, really appropriately placed to consider those and examine those.
Yeah, and I think now with media, I'm so glad that video is part of this piece, because, and it's sort of the nature of the piece, central to the piece. We're so inundated with images, and we have so little education in visual literacy.
True, yeah.
We learn the grammar and syntax of the written word, but very few of us actually have any sort of formal training in the vocabulary of the visual world. And yet we're inundated with it now 24/7. And we're also given the capability to project and use it ourselves to put our own image out there. Most people now have online websites, and we can Twitter and so on and so forth, you know. So it's become a personalized sort of art form, if you will, where the self is now digitized and out there in the quote-unquote real world.
The digital self.
Yeah, and to that... actually, I wanted to mention that in terms of also the narrative that everyone, you know, especially the young group who's very much embedded into this selfie culture, is trying to put out there. And we try to use that in the piece throughout, through the visually, overboard that we're using, kind of the hyper-mediated visuals that are going on, to create that narrative. So we asked the dancers from the beginning to actually share their selfies for a few months. We created this whole folder full of these selfies that came along, and then incorporating that through the images of them dancing and changing the temporal situation with, you know, their visceral bodies on the stage versus, you know, the narrative that they put out there, and playing with that, editing the time, and also in different angles. We captured videos of them dancing with videos being actually attached to their parts of the bodies. So we have angles of the dance that we are not, as audience sitting watching them, we are not familiar with. So there are so many different angles of self that is being incorporated through the visuals, dance, sound, and the costumes.
Hello, this is Brian Weimer of the Ix Art Park, and you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC.
All right, 47 minutes past the hour, now 48 minutes past the hour. If you're just joining us, then that's a shame, because you've missed a great show so far. But you can catch the end of it. We're here with Kim Brooks Mehta, the director of dance at UVA. We're also here with Mona Kasra and Deb Adi, the digital media designer and costume designer for the upcoming UVA Spring Dance Concert. So we've been talking about the piece that you guys are working on. Are all the, and as you said, there are 9 separate pieces. Mm-hmm. Are all the pieces that thematically dense?
What are you saying, Clinton?
Nothing.
Is that a judgment?
No,
what we described?
It's no judgment.
That is definitely a judgment. No. Trust me, I know his judgments when I hear them. That was a judgment.
You sow the. She's talking about judgment. You see, she's talking about judgment.
Yes, I am, because I know it when I see it.
Of the 9 pieces that we have, there are multiple themes that are happening. Students are exploring concepts of nostalgia and memory, and what that means, and what does it mean to be within memory or to have memories. And they're also dealing with concepts of control, other ideas. But of the 9 pieces, 5 of the pieces have original compositions for them.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
How did you get 5 original compositions?
Right. Well, there are, Brad is working with Mecca on his piece. And then we have 2 faculty, my piece, and then Katie Shetlick is working with Eli Stein, who is also, the 2 grad composers that we are working with are from the Composition and Computer Technology program in the Department of Music. And we've had multiple collaborations with individuals from that program. Just the way that we create work is very aligned oftentimes. So it's been quite a treat. And then students have also had some undergraduate composers who they've worked with to compose work. And one student in particular had a student also write a poem that's incorporated incorporated into the sound of what's being played with the piece itself. So there are lots of different elements. There are some students that are using video, some students who are using other props, but there's something for everyone in the nine pieces that are happening that evening. You're bound to find something that resonates with you if you come.
Right. Well, that leads me to my next question. I have asked before of artists who are here to talk about the things that they do. What is it that you want people to take away from the events? And to say, I'm going to flip that question and say, what is it that you want people to carry in with them?
Wow.
To see the dance concert.
Wow, an open mind and heart for seeing movement and its potential for communication on multiple levels. So seeing it not only as a form of possible entertainment, but for communication of ideas that relate to social norms and cultural values, and be willing to empathize with what you're seeing and have a journey with us. Nice. Do you guys have other...
There you go. That's the mic drop right there. Kim, Mona, Deb, thank you so much for coming. Please, one more time, give the who, what, when, where so people know.
Absolutely. Next week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, April 28th, 29th, and 30th at 8 p.m. in the Ruth Kaplan Theater. There's parking that's free in the Culberth Garage right next door to the theater. And you can get tickets at www.artsboxoffice.virginia.edu.
Awesome.
Please come.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Hope to have you guys back again.
Thank you.
UVA Spring Dance Concert. Thank you guys for coming. And now, 51 minutes past the hour. Make sure you stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. He's going to be talking about homelessness with Khaki Dimock from the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. And now it's time for that part of the show that is everyone's favorite. It's Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Thank you, Clinton. So, like a lot of people all across the world, I'm in mourning right now. As all of you know, we lost an amazing artist this week. And people have been commenting on Facebook and playing his music, and theaters have been showing his movies on repeat in celebration of his life. And I just wanted to take my few minutes to add to that cacophony, because he was so influential in my life growing up, listening to him. And I think for a lot of us, he was the first foray into sexual expression that we had, and kind of gave that to us. It gave us that freedom to be sexual and revel in it and know that it was okay. So my rant today is all about Prince and missing him. So I wanted to play a little something, and then I have one of my favorite poems that I wanted to dedicate to him.
I can watching whoever I choose. Eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant. Oh yeah, but nothing, nothing can take away this blues. Nothing can stop this lonely rain from falling, falling. Tell me, baby, where did I go wrong?
Oh, baby, I can put my arms around every boy I see.
Stop all the clocks, cut off the telephone, prevent the dog from barking with a juicy bone, silence the pianos and with muffled drum, bring out the coffin, let the mourners come. Let airplanes circle mourning overhead, scribbling on the sky the message, he is dead. Put crepe bows round the white necks of public doves, let the traffic policemen wear black cotton gloves. He was my north, my south, my east, my west, my working week, and my Sunday rest. My noon, my midnight, my talk, my song. I thought love would last forever. I was wrong. The stars are not wanted now. Put out everyone. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood, for nothing now can ever come to any good.
Our thanks to Kim Brooks, Matt, Mona Kassara, Deb Audie, Sibley Johns, and Kara West. That was Homegrown. See you next week.
Heavenly angels, cry.